Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Friday, May the 29th. Coming up, there's a warning water supply issues in Whitstable could continue into the weekend.
We supply sandwiches, crisps, drinks and ice cream. And in this weather, obviously ice cream would have been a great seller today. So it's going to impact us, dramatically.
Staff at a museum in Medway have been given advice on how to distance themselves from the views of Charles Dickens.
Time moves on, and the whole point of studying history is that we learn from it and we don't repeat its mistakes, which are many.
And Gillingham have made their first signing of the summer.
As soon as I met Gareth, had a really good conversation with him, found him really relatable, really genuine, and I think after that chat it kind of set in my mind that this was high up on my list as a place that I'd like to come.
But first on today's episode, a huge pile of rubbish has been left outside a block of flats in Medway for weeks, with residents complaining about the smell during the hot weather. Council contracted bin men have refused to clear up the mountain of bin bags and cardboard in the car park of Samuel's Tower in Chatham. Landlords who took over the block last year say it's an ongoing problem. Chris Carter is the property manager.
One of the biggest issues this site faces is fly tipping. Which is a mixture of contribution by residents and people living outside the site as well. It's been an issue that this site has been encountering for years and years. I mean, if you go onto Google Earth and you go to Street View of, I think it's around 2008, you can see there's fly tipping in the car park then. It's constantly building up, and we'll spend a few thousand pounds every now and again getting it cleared up, and then within a week it's back again. We've taken some measures to try and prevent that, or to at least mitigate it in the short term until we can find a long-term solution for it. We've installed a height barrier on site which restricts large vehicles entering the site. We were finding that a lot of transit vans, large sort of vans, trucks were coming in and dumping items. Ever since the barrier has been installed, it's certainly mitigated it. It's slowed down the extent of fly tipping, but you can still naturally get small vans underneath, so there's still the constant flow of fly tipping now and again. We have regular attendances to clear up minor fly tipping, but to the extent we have piled up, that's a truck or two load. It's not something that can be done every kind of couple of weeks, with budgets and everything else. So unfortunately, this site has a need to address items like this in the form of antisocial behaviour, as opposed to looking after what the residents really want to see, which is improvements to the building and repairs and maintenance to more aesthetic items like redecorating, which has had to be put on hold whilst we figure out the solutions to these issues that arise.
Well, local Democracy reporter Ollie Leader has also spoken to hospital worker Shanti Gale, who lives in Samuel's Tower with her mum. She's among residents who are frustrated with the lack of investment to improve facilities.
The lift is broken since 2022, not fixed, everything. And 2022, my dad was very unwell and he was ill. And then we had to call paramedics because he collapsed on the third floor. And it was really difficult for the paramedics to come up and get him down.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite a difficult thing living here. How do you feel kind of like when you walk out of your house, you see that massive pile, especially up to your head with rubbish, the litter. Like, how do you feel living here?
Oh, if I look outside from here now, right now, it looks really disgusting. And I'm worried for myself, my health, and my mom, who lives with me as well. Currently she's with her son in Wales. It's been like a couple of weeks she's been away now. And it's disgraceful.
What do you want to see done about it?
I want the agency, whoever is looking after this apartment, because I'm paying my rent to my landlady. And the thing is, it's not been sorted out. So I want them to please collect the bins. Make it clean, make it look like a good environment here where everyone can live properly and not smell a foul smell, rather than have a nice environment,
How does it make you feel when you see the money exit your bank account and you don't really feel that you're getting anything for it?
No, I really feel like what am I even paying for? Because it's really, for me, for this place, to pay that amount of money. I feel it's really a bit of high. So, and you know, all the costs are increasing, everything, daily expenses, all the transportation, the price is going up and our salary is always down and down.
Now, landlords, AM Surveying and Block Management say they need more money to fund improvements and are pursuing legal action against several residents who are refusing to pay the service charge. To make ends meet, they've had to increase fees from £1,700 a year to £3,200 per household. They're also addressing a number of fire safety issues as well as tackling the backlog of maintenance problems. Well, you can see pictures and video of that mountain of rubbish by heading to the story today at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Next on the episode, and people in Whitstable are being warned their water supply could stay patchy over the weekend after taps ran dry. South East Water say supply should be back at some point today, but it's still under strain after 8,000 homes were left without running water. Several businesses have been forced to close. Alan Hartley runs a sandwich shop in the town and wasn't able to open yesterday.
We received a message from the manager of South East Shed. It was her day off, but she kindly advised us all anyway. But having come in, we found out that someone further up in the council has made the decision not to open, and that leaves us obviously with no footfall.
Tell me about that kind of impact that might have on your business.
Yeah, very much. We supply sandwiches, crisps, drinks and ice cream, and in this weather obviously ice cream would have been a great seller today, so it's going to impact us dramatically. And what we don't know also is when it will open again and be able to reassume trade.
Are you able to estimate roughly the losses you might have seen today because you were forced to close?
On a busy bank holiday weekend, on school holiday for the kids, we'll be looking to earn somewhere between £700 and £1,000. So it's quite a dent in the finances, yeah.
Especially on a week where you would have been great, you know, the sun, the kids are off school.
And it's usually great fun. The harbour's a tremendous place for people to visit. Most of our customers are walking around with smiles on their faces when the weather's like this. It's usually great fun to do. And yeah, we just wish we could be open to continue to serve them.
And again, as you mentioned, there's no date there, is there? I suppose you just kind of, it's a waiting game from here on out.
We're purely waiting, I suppose, mainly on South East Water, but also obviously once South East Water have given their information, the council needs to make their decision as well. We would love to welcome people to Whitstable and give them the full service that, you know, they deserve. People are taking their time off, they're paying full fuel prices, parking prices, train tickets. So to come to a town to enjoy and find half of it shut is a great shame, and we're terribly sorry that's the case, and hope to be open for them soon.
Alan was speaking to Megan Shaw from our colleagues at KMTV. Well, author Julie Wasmer is a water campaigner and lives in Whitstable. She's previously refused to pay bills to Southern Water due to sewage releases into the sea. I asked if she might consider a boycott of South East Water after suffering with disrupted supplies this week.
Well, the problem is that we don't really have any other recourse. Because, you know, ordinarily, when a company fails to provide its services satisfactorily, customers are protected by the Consumer Act 2015. And you can then, you know, bring that company to account. You can either negotiate a lower rate for the unsatisfactory service, or you can not pay at all. But water customers do not have that protection. You know, instead, the water companies themselves will tell us, you know, in letters, that no written legal contract exists for the water customer. And under the Water Industry Act 1991, by which the water industry in this country was privatised, water companies are obliged by statute to provide services and to fix and recover charges, which we, the customers, are obliged to pay, rather like council tax. But even if those services are not provided. So we can't go to another company because the water companies have a monopoly on the services. Privatisation was meant to lead to a better service through competition as well as lower bills, but we can't go anywhere else. So in 2021, I decided I wasn't going to pay. And I was taken to court this year. I conducted my own defence. the judge at Canterbury Magistrates Court was incredibly sympathetic and spoke out about the situation and said that he reads the papers too. He understands the service is poor. But until really government itself does something to bring these companies to account, I'm afraid all the money that we pay to them is going a lot of the time straight out of the country to all the hedge funds and the investment companies that own these companies. And they're 70% owned by foreign investment companies.
Now, South East Water have told us that they'd pumped more than 600 million litres of water into the network on Wednesday to try and ease the problems. They say all of this is down to increased demand during the recent heatwave. Well, the leader of Kent County Council is now promising to hold bosses to account with a new resilience partnership. The group will bring together water companies and regulators to try and find solutions to long-term issues. Lyndon Kemp-Karen has told me she just had to take action.
Kent County Council is not responsible for the water supply in Kent. You know, we're responsible for an awful lot of things, but water isn't one of them. So when I see something like that falling down and I'm powerless really to do anything about it, it's not a great feeling. So what I'm going to do is set up the Kent Water Resilience Partnership, because I think it is about time that somebody, and that somebody is going to be me, sets up a working group with strategic oversight to look at the resilience of the water supply across the entire county. Now, the purpose of that group is going to be to bring together all the organisations responsible, that's the water companies and their regulators, into one space. And if I need to, bang a few heads together, I'm fairly good at that, and get some solutions on the table. But more important than that, get actions. You know, these kind of meetings have to result in actions, because I don't think the people of Kent are going to settle for anything less at this stage.
I was going to say, it's all well and good having meetings, isn't it? But people want their water back. So essentially, what powers would you have to be able to tell those people in the room to actually get on and do something?
Sure. Well, at the moment, the way I see it is the responsibility for this whole problem is far too fragmented. You know, it falls across the water operators, the supply network, the regulators. There's no single place where the whole system can be looked at as one whole and solutions found, actions actioned. So that I see as my role. I want to have clear and open scrutiny of how those responsible are responding to the problems that my residents are experiencing.
I was chatting to a colleague today actually saying, why have we never gone down the desalination route? I mean, we're an island, for goodness sake, but I'm sure an expert would tell me that it's ridiculous and it's too expensive or whatever. But do you want other solutions other than capturing rainwater to be looked at? I mean, would desalination plants be something to consider, maybe even if they were just for emergencies?
I think it's absolutely something we should be considering. Like you say, other countries, you know, I could name a handful of desert countries that never have water outages because they've invested in other alternative means of desalination, of water harvesting, water storage, all those things. You know, I get the feeling, and it's not just me, I get the feeling at the moment the UK seems to be in a period of managed decline. We've had no investment, little to no investment in big infrastructure projects like the water supply system for decades. And I'm afraid, you know, the cracks are starting to show now. It's just not good enough. We are a first world country. We are not in the developing world, you know, but it doesn't feel like that sometimes, does it? When you turn on the tap and nothing comes out and nobody can tell you why and nobody can tell you when it's going to be fixed. I mean, it's just completely unacceptable.
We'll continue to keep you updated on any water supply problems in Kent over the weekend. A man's died following a crash involving an e-scooter and fire engine in Dartford. It happened at the junction with Darrenth Road late on Monday night. A 21-year-old was taken to a London hospital but passed away yesterday. Six fire engines have been sent to tackle a blaze in grassland near Gravesend. It broke out in Northfleet at around 5:30 yesterday evening. Managed to put out the flames and no one was hurt. Plans for a solar farm on greenbelt land near Sevenoaks are going to be discussed for a second time. A previous decision on the proposals for farmland between Ridley and New Ash Green was pushed back. The people behind it say the 72,000 panels would produce enough power for more than 17,000 homes.
Kent Online reports.
Emergency and urgent care services provided by the ambulance service in Kent has been upgraded following an inspection. The care quality Quality Commission visited in September to see if improvements had been made after SECAM had previously been rated as requires improvement. They're now said to be good after the watchdog found evidence of safe, person-centred care and staff working effectively together. Staying with health news, and a new boss has been chosen to oversee Medway's NHS Trust. Mark Orchard will be taking over in the autumn after the previous chief exec resigned 2 months ago. He's promising to listen to staff and patients amid concerns about financial issues and job losses. Now, staff at a museum in Medway have been given advice on how to distance themselves from the views of Charles Dickens, despite not actually receiving any complaints. Workers at the Guildhall in Rochester have been told how to answer questions on the author's opinions on race and the British Empire. You may or may not know that the museum houses a Making of Mr. Dickens exhibition, which was actually opened by Queen Camilla in 2022. Well, historian Shane Waterman, who leads popular tours in the town, thinks all of this is a bit of an overreaction. He's been speaking to Ollie from the local Democracy Reporting Service.
Time moves on, and the whole point of studying history is that we learn from it and we don't repeat its mistakes, which are many. You know, every civilization there's ever been and ever will be will make mistakes with their attitudes, their language, everything. And we've done it here. And comparing Dickens' views from 170 years ago, which I think this is where this all starts from, to today is it's really ludicrous. I mean, even in my lifetime, you know, the attitudes and language that we used when I was a boy in the 70s, you just wouldn't dream of using it now. You know, time moves on. You know, we learn from things.
Obviously, do you think, because part of it is the fact that by today's standards, well, Dickens was a progressive in some ways, his views, his writings about poverty and class, is he, his views as well, by today's standards, are controversial, and we have moved on to society. Is it not worth acknowledging that Dickens would have views nowadays, if his views held nowadays, would not really pass the sniff test, as it were?
No, they wouldn't. You're right. Absolutely. But that would apply to anyone from his era. It's not just him. And there were people with far, far more extreme views than him at the time. He was seen as, you know, very much a progressive, a liberal, you know, particularly, as you said, all his work with championing the poor and so on. He was very much on, you know, really on the left of politics in the day. But times moved on. It's 170 years. Some of these views, which are often quoted, are taken out of context. A lot of them centre around his sending of his own son, Walter, to India in 1867, I think it was, 1857 rather. He was only 16, and he sent him out there just in time for the thing called the Indian Mutiny. And he was tied up in it, was involved in the fighting, and it's a really bloody episode in Indian history. And he was a normal, really concerned father, and he wrote some things in letters to his friends, which today you wouldn't dream of writing, you just wouldn't do it today. But that was the way that the Victorians saw the world. You know, that they, you know, they saw themselves as being, you know, literally masters of the world almost. But times moved on, the world's changed. You know, learn from it, put it in context and understand it and move on.
Do you think it's important that we should remember, obviously Dickens has a reputation as one of our great literary authors, is it important to remember Dickens not as this stuffy middle class fellow with views about making the world this kind of white English class gentry, or is it more important to remember him as this progressive figure that we see?
Well, Dickens was asked well into his career, why have you never gone into politics, Mr. Dickens? And his answer was very succinct. I can do more in one novel than I could in a lifetime in the Commons. And he was absolutely bang on with it. He did. You know, you look at all certain ones of his novels, particularly Oliver Twist, totally changed the approach towards children in orphanages and workhouses and things, just by the way he did it. You know, you've got to balance this against all the good that he did, and he did an incredible amount of good.
Plans have been revealed for a £2.5 million sports and community facility within a new housing estate on the Kent coast. Martello Lakes is being built between Hythe and Dymchurch, and land has been set aside for a leisure complex. The council say it could include paddle and tennis courts, grass football pitches and a yoga studio. A documentary showing the story behind the revival of a Kent theatre is going to be shown for the first time later. The show Must Go On reveals the work that went into the reopening of the Granville in Ramsgate. The same team have taken on the Winter Gardens in Margate and are hoping to welcome audiences back there next spring. And finally, a two-day music festival headlined by Rudimental and Scissor Sisters gets underway in Kent later. Lovebox is taking place at Dreamland in Margate after previously being held in London's Gunnersbury Park. It was founded in 2002 and ran for 18 years before the pandemic. Acts will be on the scenic stage and in the Hall by the Sea.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and Gillingham have made their first signing of the summer. Midfielder James Brophy previously played for Cambridge United and helped them win promotion from League Two last season. The 31-year-old has been speaking to the club's media team and says it was boss Gareth Ainsworth who convinced him to join.
As soon as I met Gareth, had a really good conversation with him, really good chat, found him really relatable, really genuine. And I think after that chat, it kind of set in my mind that this was high up on my list as a place that I'd like to come.
I was just going to say, I thought after winning promotion with Cambridge, you'd be a man in demand, but what ultimately swung it for you to come to Priestfield?
Yeah, I think for me as a player, it's important to sign for a club. You sign for the manager, really. And I think, yeah, having met a few managers over the course of the off-season, I think Gareth definitely stood out to me and impressed me with how he communicated, his values, his characteristics, and was someone I saw that I could play for and would want to play for.
He's an ambitious character, we're an ambitious club, we want to be in that mix next season. How important is it for you to join a club that has that ambition of trying to get to the next level?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm obviously not getting any younger. I've been fortunate enough to play a lot of games, and I feel like I've still got a lot of years left in me, but we've had a really good season this year, just gone with Cambridge, achieving promotion, being successful, and that was definitely something that was important to me to look for a club with that ambition as the next step, and I think that's one that's definitely here.
He's signed a two-year contract. And in cricket, Kent will be looking to maintain their 100% record in this season's T20 Blast later. The Spitfires welcome Essex to the St Lawrence ground in Canterbury. It follows wins over Middlesex and Sussex Sharks. Plays due to get underway at 6:30. Finally, if you head to the website today, you can see fantastic video of a mum from Whitstable who says she's managed to transform her physical and mental health by lifting heavy rocks. Jo Mays takes part in national competitions and has more than 2,000 followers on Instagram. In just 3 years, she's gone from having a poor diet and being overweight to lifting 23 stone rocks and carrying them, outdoing many men despite only being 5'3". Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. Now that gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to head to the What's On pages for some inspo of what to get up to in Kent over the weekend. Plus, we've got the very latest review from our secret drinker. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online podcast.